Welcome back, Michael Warren Thomas here. It's For the Love of Food at SavorLife.com. And Rochester Food Net has a new post out a couple days ago. Karen Cross Smith posted about the spice blend za'atar. And a couple of recommendations. You should read the whole thing to get the full picture on what za'atar is. Maybe you've seen it on some menus. She mentioned Cedar Restaurant, which is one of her favorites, that they do this this spice blend dusted over their chewy flatbread with some olive oil, and it's the za'atar menakish. Just $3.50, according to her. And I've had a bunch of food at Cedar. I love it there too, but haven't had this one, so I'm going to go back and try that. You'll find it in spice shops. We got some in Boston at a wonderful restaurant called Sofra that also has the spices and all kinds of other things. You can't really call it it's certainly not a grocery store. It's not a deli. It's just a place that has fantastic food and serves lots of pastries in particular, but lots of other dishes. But informal, it's really one of the more informal restaurants you'd be in. A lot of people take it home or eat outside. There's a couple cookbooks they've done too, and so that was kind of where I was introduced to za'atar. And as Karen describes it, it's ground thyme, toasted sesame seeds, and sumac, but also some other spices, depending on who's making it. But she says the sumac is the star of the seasoning, and you know, you should read about that. It's, again, rochesterfoodnet.com. You can get more details and check out her post. Again, za'atar, if you haven't discovered it, you need to go in search of it. And it's a blend like a curry or garam masala that can be used in a lot of different ways. And again, Middle Eastern, Lebanese cultures in particular, it is part of many of the dishes that they make. So if you get to Boston at some point, you should definitely go in search of Sofra, especially if you like pastries and Lebanese food. It is an amazing place. And if you know of a favorite place, even if it's not right here, but it's one that almost draws you back to a city, let me know, and maybe someday I'll get to that city and I can try that place. You can always email me suggestions, michael@savorlife.com. I've been posting to Rochester Food Net's Instagram this week, and we're getting to the heart of the harvest season now for farm markets and farmers markets. So as I posted yesterday on Rochester Food Net on Instagram, some photos of Gentles Farm Market, which is... It was Penfield Road. I'm not sure exactly what town they're in, but it's sort of the edge of Brighton and Penfield. Really very quick to get to. It's one of the closest farm markets to downtown Rochester. And they happen to have delicious sweet corn. Some of the best I've had this year has been from Gentles. Also, some really, really good tomatoes. And those are, given all the heat we've had, seem to be coming on more slowly than I would expect. But it still can be hard to find really good tomatoes. And Gentles has some really good ones. And lots of other fruits and vegetables. And some local products. As I posted, Java's Coffee. The beans, and they sell them by the bag there, and they've got lots of cheeses, really surprising number of cheeses at Gentles Farm Market. and plants. They a couple of years ago, they were purchased by Clover Nursery and Garden Center, which is on Landing Road, and they've kept it pretty similar, but they've brought in more of the plants that they sell at the nursery on Landing Road. So there's some nice perennials and other plants that you could add to your garden at Gentles Farm Market. They ask that you husk the corn at home rather than husk it there. And I was at Powers Farm Market picking up corn a few days before, and there you can husk it at Powers, and I kind of appreciated that. Now, there are reasons. I'm guessing that Gentles Farm Market doesn't want lots of people standing around husking corn all next to each other, which makes a lot of sense. During this pandemic, Powers Farm Market has had a couple areas, and I think maybe leaving up to their customers whether they want to be, depending on how many people are buying corn at that point and husking it. I've kind of lost my composting area in my yard, which just created another sort of seeding area where I used to keep the compost. And so now I may have to sign up for community composting, perhaps. They pick up your compost from you in the green bins. You can also exchange the green bins when they're full at Abundance Market. A couple other drop-off points. But community composting does service most of the city and a lot of the surrounding suburbs. They've grown quite a bit. And so if you are husking a lot of corn and have a lot of corn cobs, and we do because I eat a lot of sweet corn this time of year, and other things that you would normally put in a compost pile but you don't have space for or don't have a compost pile at this moment, sign up for community composting. I think it's like $10 a week or something, and then the end of the season you get a couple bags of compost as kind of a thank you for participating. And we're keeping things that have no business in a landfill. They can create some fantastic soil. It's insanity to put compostable things in landfills, but we do far too much of that. So community composting is turning that waste into something not only useful, but one of the best things you could add to your garden is that kind of compost. So I may end up having to sign up with them. Normally, over the course of the summer, we'd have a pile of sweet corn husks, in the far back of our yard. They take up a lot of space, and I don't put out the cobs after we're done with them because that really attracts the squirrels and the raccoons, and I don't need more of them in my backyard. And community composting is a really good option. I also saw a post from Flower City Pickers, and if you'd like to help out during the summer or fall, they're being very careful. They're socially distanced sorting at the Rochester Public Market. But this now for the next 3 or 4 months is the busiest season for them as more produce comes in. Both from the distributors that sell at the Rochester Public Market, as well as the farmers and the Flower City Pickers, they salvage that. And some of it goes that's perfectly fine, but the farmer or the distributor doesn't want to deal with it. They send some of that for use as food. They send some of it for use for farm animals, and then they send some of it that is even the farm animals wouldn't want to compost. But as they said, their byline, feed people, not landfills. There's something like 40% of the food that we produce for people ends up in a landfill, never being used. we are putting all these resources into preparing the fields, growing the food, harvesting the food, watering those plants while they're starting, and yet after we harvest it, ship it, and then you buy it in the store, and of that amount that's produced, it's about, I think, 40% that ends up in a landfill, which we don't need more landfills. It was just a reminder, the post I saw from Flower City Pickers, that they are doing some great work, saving literally tons of food, an astounding amount of food that they're able to process each Saturday. So if you want more details, look up Flower City Pickers and community composting, and we can reduce the amount of things that go to landfills, which is crucial. You should also grow some of your own vegetables. And I was at a couple of farm markets this week, and the garden centers still have fruit, vegetables, and fruit too. I saw blueberry plants at Sunscape Farms in Greece. You're not going to get blueberries this year from those plants unless they're already on them. I didn't see any blueberries on them, but there's a good chance you'll get some next year. And we get into this in the gardening show sometimes, but blueberries need very acid soil, so they're kind of particular. And if you have clay, they're not going to do so well. And you need several varieties of blueberries to cross-pollinate. So in the meantime, go out to Herd Orchards. They have lots and lots of blueberries, a banner year for blueberries at Herd Orchards, and they're at their peak right now. And one of the easiest things to pick yourself, blueberries, you know, they don't have thorns on them. They tend to be in clusters. They come off very easily, and they're just a fun thing to pick. You also can't damage them very much when you're picking them out. Like, you know, raspberries are easily damaged. Blueberries are pretty tough. They freeze well. I can't get enough blueberries. So, but Herd Orchards has some other things that you can pre-order, and that's just to make sure that they have them. You might call ahead if you haven't pre-ordered and see if they have some of these things if you just want to buy them. Lots of red currants. There are black raspberries, and you can pick your own. European black sour cherries. There are also sweet black cherries and the white Emperor Francis heritage cherries. And again, these will not last. So if you're looking for one of these in particular, I would call first. And Amy sent me a note, said that it's unbelievable we still have sweet cherries. Just like in Italy and Turkey, this big sweet cherry that produce a lot of sweet cherries. They are very, very arid. These varieties, which don't often produce in our area or produce very well, she says, are fat, sweet, and abundant. Also, Mount Morrissey sour cherries. It's near the end of some amazing picking of those. So, again, last week I was talking about the seasons and how much I love the way these seasons change, but that also means that you got to say goodbye to cherries. And I've got a couple quarts still in my refrigerator. They hold really well in the refrigerator. So save, get some extras and keep them in your refrigerator. Black raspberries also hold up really well. The red raspberries are the tricky one. Those I would eat those first. They're just the most tender of the fruits that are available right now. And red currants are something that you don't often see. In fact, until a few years ago, Herd Orchards and other farms weren't allowed to grow currants because it was believed that they were a host for a disease that affected apple trees, I think. And so it was illegal to grow currants they're grown in other parts of the world, but it was illegal to grow them here. And probably about 10 years ago, they discovered that currants weren't to blame, and farms were allowed to start growing them again. And Herd Orchards has a lot of red currants available now, and they're just this beautiful red, very vibrant red. So if you love cherries, you need to move quickly and stockpile some of those. Pamela Graham, one of my favorite bakers in our area. I don't think she's working at a restaurant right now, but I've got to find out if she does go back to working in a restaurant as a baker. She was the baker at the Holloway House for many years, and they would do and the Holloway House has been closed for 5 years now, maybe, and is, I believe, still for sale. But in cherry season, they would make a sweet cherry glazed pie where the cherries were not cooked. They pitted them individually and then put a kind of a cherry glaze over them, a little bit of whipped cream and a really good crust. And that was a sweet cherry glazed pie. And I think people would call the Holloway House, like in April and May, way too early, thinking about these cherry pies and asking them when they might be ready. So there may be some places that sell a sweet cherry glazed pie. Often it's too sweet, and you've got to have good cherries. So, and I was just checking out some pies recently, and the place had a lot of different pies. And look at the ingredients, and there's just too many ingredients. And I've been spoiled by Herd Orchards pies, so I used to get pies whenever I could, and these days I'm pickier, checking out the ingredients. And I overheard someone asking this place that was selling all these pies, which one is the least sweet of your pies? That was an interesting question, because I totally agree. Most pies are too sweet. And just like most jams and jellies are too sweet, the sugar is a filler as well as maybe somewhat preservative. But it masks the flavor of the fruit. And the fruit is expensive. So, I understand why these things end up sweeter than they should be, and a lot of people like things very sweet. But if you're looking for pies that aren't too sweet, I really love the way Herd Orchards does them. And if you run into some really delicious pies somewhere, or some of your favorites, let me know. I'm in search of them, but I'm skeptical based on the ingredients and things. This time of the year, you can pit and freeze cherries so that you can make cherry pie this winter. Cherries freeze pretty well. Most of these fruits really freeze quite well. And then you have a stockpile to draw from. If you don't get around to making a pie, whether it's blueberries or cherries, they are amazing in drinks. I had some frozen blueberries that we'd had from long before blueberry season started, and I put those in a drink with some locally pressed grape juice from last fall that I had frozen, and some sparkling water, and then these frozen blueberries, which were like little mini ice cubes, and it looked beautiful. It was delicious, and the blueberries were amazing. You might think that they would have no texture after being frozen, but really surprisingly good texture from these frozen blueberries. So while we have the bounty of the season, freeze some of these things. If you find really good sweet corn, get a couple dozen extra years, or that can be hard to do on the spot. So maybe call them, call whatever farm market or farmer where you've fallen in love with the corn, and ask them if you can get, you know, a couple dozen years, you know, next couple of days, just so that they can be prepared and you don't buy out all the corn they have. And then blanch it for a couple minutes, cut it off the cob, put it in the freezer. Mason jars work beautifully for that. And perhaps cook those cobs. That's the recipe that Mark Cupolo has in the Public Market Cooking Book. The first cookbook that the Public Market did, and still the best sweet corn soup that I've ever had. So I mentioned it some last week. Check with the Rochester Public Market. See if they have some. I think they do have some copies of that first one. They also have a second Public Market cookbook that they did. Some great recipes and a really neat way to connect and learn more about the farmers, the stories that are in those cookbooks. And Kurt Brownell, part of Rochester Food Net, Adam Wilcox also were key people who volunteered a ton of time and effort to help produce those cookbooks along with the Friends of the Rochester Public Market. Kurt Brownell is a professional photographer and just some fantastic photos and stories. The market office at the Rochester Public Market would be the place to go. I was at the Rondaquoit Farmers Market this week. It's on Thursdays from 4 to 8 p.m. And there were two pickle vendors there, which I thought was kind of fascinating. One was Mark and Amy's Pickles. They're the owners of Ludwig's on Gibb Street. They also have their own pickle line and had spicy and a classic. There was also Happy Pickle Rochester, which had probably six different types of pickles. And this was not a big farmer's market because they don't have music this year. It's held at the town hall in Arundicoid on Titus. There are fewer people around, and so you know, they have just two food trucks, whereas in the past they've had three or more. But again, some really good vendors. Bee Wild Honey was there, got some honey from them, and I also got some more peaches and tomatoes, and got dinner from Bay Vista Taqueria, their food truck. They have closed their restaurant on Bay Road and are doing only catering now out of a location nearby there. But their food truck is available for special events. Sometimes they go to neighborhoods, and you can book them for special events, for catering some really delicious food from Bay Vista. And a nice setting there at Arundicoit Town Hall. So that's Thursday nights. And you have to choose on Thursdays. Well, you don't have to choose. You can go to both, but South Wedge Farmers Market is on Thursdays also. You could go to both. I've done that before, and it's not unusual for me to go to several farm markets also in one day, especially now with all the different produce and things that are showing up. It's amazing what's now available locally. Lighthouse Gardens announced that they have some bunch carrots. Just started harvesting those, and Lighthouse Gardens sells at the Brighton Farmers Market on Sundays. You can also be a part of their CSA, and you have to pre-order to pick up at the farm, but they sell it. The Brighton Farmers Market. Those carrots will probably go quickly tomorrow. So starts at 9 a.m., goes till 1. Get there early if you want those carrots. And I'm not certain that they'll have enough. Depends how many were ordered in their CSA. So I'm not certain that they'll have them, but get there early and you'll have the best shot at it, at least. If you see some really cool vegetables at places, again, take a couple photos, send them to me, michael@saverlife.com. It'll give me some additional places to stop. And of course, today, Saturdays, the Fairport Farmers Market is going on, and Perry Farmers Market. There are a bunch of others around the region on Saturdays, generally until noon. So you have a little bit of time to get there. Fairport isn't that far away. Perry's an hour, but lots of other fun things to do while you're in that area. We'll be back with Discover the Finger Lakes here at SaverLife.com. And tomorrow at 9 a.m., it is the Grapevine. One final note, there are four categories in which you can vote for Finger Lakes businesses and the region in general. USA Today's 10best.com continues to have these the voting going on, and it'll go on for several more weeks through mid-August. We've won some of these categories before, but people are distracted. I mean, pandemics are known to distract people, and tons of other things that are happening. So the Finger Lakes is dropping in these polls somewhat, and sometimes it feels there's not a lot you can do to change the trajectory of where this virus is going and where this country is going. Vote this fall, I would emphasize that. But in a small way, you can help our region in this national online poll by voting every day. And that's really how we've won these in the past, is passionate fans of the region who they vote every day, as I do. Get up in the morning and takes all of 37 seconds to place these votes. One is for Best Wine Region. Finger Lakes is number 3. Best Wine Tour Company, Experience of Finger Lakes, is number 4. Best Wine Festival, Finger Lakes Wine Festival, is number 5 in that ranking. And Best Winery Restaurant, FLX Table, is at number 15. And they won that category a couple years ago. So I think they were 10th last year. So help these businesses in our region out. And there were 20 nominated. So, and these were nominated by writers for USA Today, not anyone locally. So you only have the 20 in each category to choose from, and there's one in each category of those four categories that's from the Finger Lakes, or is the Finger Lakes in the Best Wine Region voting. So vote every day, convince a couple friends and relatives maybe that they should vote every day. Just leave the tabs open on your computer. Easy to vote every day, and that's what will move us up. It's not too late to move up to number one in these polls. It's as Laura Winter Falk from Experience of Finger Lakes, as she wrote, this is a marathon. It's not a sprint race. And I think that's why the Finger Lakes has won these categories before, is because of passionate people. So 10best.com, look up Best Wine Region, Best Wine Festival, Best Wine Tour Company, Best Winery Restaurant, and vote every day if you can, or most days. Well, we'll be back with Discover the Finger Lakes here at SaverLife.com.